Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Oogie Boogie Bash tickets are on sale. The Haunted Mansion has an opening date with a twist.
A new bubble experience coming to Downtown Disney. A soft opening of Din Tai Fung. We talk about Disneyland After Dark Pride Night and more. DL Weekly starts now.
This is your captain speaking to you from the wheelhouse. I'd like to welcome all of you aboard the DL Weekly podcast. For safe passage on our trip, please do not sit or climb on the outside railings. And be sure to watch your children. The water can be unpredictable in these parts, and we'd sure hate to lose any of you.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of June 26, 2024. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. We'd like to thank everyone who supports the show. This week, we would like to give a special shout out to, all of these are new supporters this week, Bonnie, Amy T, Jenny D, Daniel B, and Monica L. Thank you for starting to support the show. If you would like to help support the show and get an ad-free versions of each episode, head on over to dlweekly.net/support and become an official weekly tier.
Now let's get to the news.
Extra, extra, read all about it. DL Weekly reports from intrepid correspondents Tag and Teresa. You heard it here first, ladies and gents. Breaking news!
One of the hottest after-hours tickets is the Oogie Boogie Bash. Tickets for this year's bash went on sale for Inspire keyholders on June 24th. All other keyholders have an opportunity for early tickets on June 26th, starting no earlier than 8:45 a.m. Disneyland time, with general public tickets on sale June 27th, also no earlier than 8:45 a.m. Disneyland time. I love how they always do that. They won't say for sure this time. It's always, well, no earlier then. But
I mean, that's good because then you're not like up at like 3 in the morning trying to get tickets.
Well, and then also if there's like a hiccup, they didn't promise 9 a.m. They said no earlier then.
Sure. I feel like for some reason this year for me, Oogie Boogie Bash came out of nowhere. Feel like maybe last year we talked about tickets coming out. But I think because of the fact that we had Star Wars night and Disney Channel night and all of these like little tickets,
here when this went on sale and was announced.
That's
true. You were in Europe, so that's probably the other thing that's playing against for you.
Yeah,
we definitely. I remember this last year because I was one that grabbed them and.
Because yesterday, somebody in our chat said that they got their tickets for Oogie Boogie Bash, and I was like, oh. Already?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds like the pre-sale for the ticket holders that were able, or the key holders that were able to go in the queue early, it sounds like it was pretty smooth. From what we heard from Weekly Tiers in our Discord chat, yeah, we have a little, like, I don't know, support group where we're all kind of commiserating together as we're patiently, impatiently waiting in line to have it be our spot to then, you know, jump in and grab what we want to grab. But everybody seemed in really great spirits. Honestly, the only thing that was happening in our Discord chat was people like being excited, like, yay, I got my tickets. I grabbed this day. You know, it wasn't the whole, oh, my little man's not moving, or, oh, this queue's taking forever. So I want to take that as a great sign that this kind of layered rollout is working well.
27 nights this year.
Yes, which is up, I want to say, 2 from last year. I believe last year they had 25 nights, so they did add a couple more nights. We are sneaking into August this year, which that's a first. I don't know how I feel about it, but the demand's there.
Yeah. I mean, they've basically done every... So it seems like they do these on a lot of Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday. Seems to be the days of the week they do it. I will say it looks like in the beginning of September, probably because of the holiday, like Labor Day and stuff in the beginning of September, they probably don't have some of those things. But October, like all of those days seem to be full with that in the later part of September. I figured it was a matter of time, especially since the fact that Walt Disney World's Halloween party has been starting in like mid-August for a while. I just knew it was a matter of time before we got into August. One thing that we'll talk about a little bit later is the fact that the holiday time is giving a little bit more breathing room to Halloween. So I thought that was kind of interesting that Halloween time moved up and then the holiday time moved further down. Just interesting. Well, we have an opening date for the Haunted Mansion, Teresa. I'm sure you're excited to finally have some type of information on this. The mansion will return as Haunted Mansion Holiday with the start of the Halloween season on August 23rd. For the reopening, guests will be able to experience the attraction through virtual queue only with no standby available. MiceChat reports that the attraction may soft open as early as sometime in July, since the interior of the attraction is mostly complete. But again, that's just something that they are reporting on. So take that with as much grain of salt as you would like.
Yeah, and I had just watched David from Fresh Bake's construction video, and he was actually saying the opposite, that he was also hearing the July rumor, but according to his sources, cast members have not been called back yet. So he feels that, you know, August might make more sense. Who knows? Time will tell. Disney will let us know when it happens. But the interesting thing, a lot of people were a little confused why virtual queue. You know, there was a lot of people thinking, oh, the demand's going to be so high because it was been closed for so long and it's Haunted Mansion Holiday, so the demand is already, you know, crazy. No. So the reason it's virtual queue only is because the exterior queue construction will not be finished and wrapped up before they open the attraction. So what's happening is kind of what I predicted I thought was going to happen with Mansion all along, because if the construction is on the exterior, why are we not allowing guests to enjoy the interior? Well, that's exactly what's happening. So there will still be construction walls up and around the queue. Same thing with the exit, because we are waiting for the new gift shop or carriage house to materialize as well. So the reason it's virtual queue is there isn't going to be physical queue space. So because there isn't space for them to be able to have a lightning lane or a standby queue, it's virtual queue only, so they can kind of control how many people are going. So basically the thought is you're just going to walk in from off the main path and just kind of go straight into the mansion. So the queue for the virtual queue may kind of spill into the main walkway there, but it wouldn't be nearly the volume of people if it were open as normal with standby and lightning lane. So I'm glad that they're doing this, because really, when they shut the entire thing down, I thought the whole thing was going to, like, okay, well, that's it. The whole thing's going to be closed until the whole thing's finished. So I'm glad that they're bringing the mansion back, even though it's not going to be 100% done.
I have so many thoughts about this. So first of all, from when we were there last week, it looks like they're doing a pretty good job getting the queue. They've added some brickwork and a bunch of stuff. And if you go watch, like you said, David's Fresh Baked, or there's just a ton of like photos and stuff of this. I feel like they should be able to get it wrapped up before August.
We've got the elevator that's going in.
Sure.
So, and I haven't seen anybody being able to like spy over the walls, any work going on with the elevator. So that might be part of the time. Because, right, you're right. Like putting cement, they have the hard work done. They have the groundwork done. Now it's just laying brick.
My other concern is the gift shop at the exit. So they haven't really done anything with that.
Oh, yes, that's going to
be
interesting.
So even if you open up the attraction early because the rest of the queue is not done, you're still going to have this gift, it's going to be a tiny little corridor for exit if they open it, if you're going to exit through there.
So what do you think of this? Since this is me blue skying, sure, if you will. What do you think of this? So they control how many people are going through this attraction,
sure,
per hour with their virtual queue. You could. I'm not saying it's going to be the prettiest thing. You could almost exit and enter from the front doors. You could have one stretching room going down while the other one's taking people back up. You could split that hallway in half. Because, again, we're going to have a fraction of the people going in and out of the mansion as we normally do. So they could potentially not have you exit through the traditional exit, through the crypt on the right side of the mansion where the gift shop is going to go. Because you're right, that could be very tight. Or they could just have you spill, you could still come out of the crypt, but then they just have you wrap around and you walk through the front lawn.
Sure.
Type area to then exit.
I just feel like no matter what, this is going to be an operational nightmare for them.
I'm curious, and I'm hoping that it opens early so that we can kind of check out and see for ourselves how this is all going to work while we're there for D23. So everyone cross your fingers that we have an early August, you know, a late July, early August opening. Because I'm really curious to see how this is all going to play out. I do think we have a hint, and you've got this pulled up on your screen. I think we have a hint on what may or may not be happening temporarily. They're not picking the mansion up and turning it by any means. But if you look at, if you pull up your Disneyland app and look at the map, the mansion looks like it's been turned. The front entrance almost looks like it's facing Tiana's palace now. So I'm thinking that's the queue might be leading you there. So that's where you'd kind of, I don't want to say enter, but quote unquote enter, and then wrap around to the front doors as usual. But I just think it's interesting that they changed the graphic of the mansion on the map. And if you look at that, that's not the new queue. Like, they don't have the new, what the new queue is going to look like in the app either. They've just got this short little path leading to that side front door.
I do you think, okay, let's, well, two questions. Let me finish up with this first one first. Do you think that this could pre-open, do you think it could be D23 day and it's like D23 members can do the mansion? That'd be a good first day, and that's in August, so...
Or maybe for D23 day, it's D23 members get to do the mansion.
That's
that
what I just
day.
Said.
No, but, like, it was open, but then that day, there's no virtual queue, and it's D23 members only.
The other question...
There's potential there.
The other question is, people have reported that work is going on inside the mansion. What do you think that entails?
I've heard rumors, and I hope they're right.
Okay.
I've heard that the attic is getting some TLC, specifically our lovely bride.
Oh, yes, I've heard this too.
Which I feel like she could use some TLC and some plus.
Because you want to get rid of the projected face or whatever. That's what I heard, maybe.
I'm so sorry to all of the Haunted Mansion bride lovers out there. Our girl needs some TLC. She's kind of one of the... She's one of the most iconic characters in the mansion... But she's not living up to her full potential. I'm just going to say it as nicely as I can.
What do you want it to be?
With technology, I think she could be so much cooler.
Like how?
Well, like, look at, okay, so you see her, and then you see the Hatbox Ghost. And it's a, like, for me, it's a very stark difference.
Sure, okay.
She's not as believable to me in her current state as the Hatbox Ghost
Okay.
I'm not an imaginator.
Okay,
I'm not
so
going to tell them how they do their job.
Is that all you've heard? Attic?
That's the biggest one.
What else have you heard?
That's the only thing I've heard. Oh, but that's the one that's because that's the only I heard that and then I stopped because I'm like, they're rumors. We don't know. Nobody's, you know, unless you're in Imagineering working on these things, you don't know for sure.
I'm hoping that they bring back, because remember there was that cage with the bird the rat or whatever it was in it. Like, I'm hoping that comes back. I'm hoping they do something. We won't know because it'll be Haunted Mansion Holiday at the beginning. I'm hoping that they do something with the load area because that would be a nice plus area. That seems to be like the low hanging fruit of like where could they make some changes that would be a net positive and there would be not a lot of controversy. Because I feel like if you change other aspects, if you change stuff in the graveyard, or you change stuff in the ballroom, like I think people could be opinionated about that.
Sure.
Where I think all of us are in agreement that the normal Haunted Mansion area where you load behind there is boring.
Yeah, which, because it's just a big blank space. Yeah. During the holidays, they do fill it with stuff, and it's more
lively
and interesting.
Unless, if they do that, it might end up being like, God, what attraction was that? Maybe it was the castle, when they did the castle decorations for one of the holidays, or for one of the celebrations for the anniversaries, they didn't do the snow that year. So I'm wondering if maybe if they did something with that, they won't have that section for Haunted Mansion Holiday this year if they're doing something like that. I hope they're doing something because that is kind of a boring area in the non-holiday time.
Yeah, some plussing and some theming.
Are you happy to have a date? A possible date?
Yes.
I knew you'd be happy.
Well, this July, a new bubble experience will come to Downtown Disney. The, quote, bubbles experience at Downtown Disney District, presented by Disney Junior's Ariel, end quote, will take place from noon to 4 p.m. from July 1st through July 31st. So, month of July, get your bubble on. A bubble moment will happen every half hour with a DJ hosting at the Downtown Disney live stage and launch.
We finally have a name.
We do.
This was on the official Disney Parks blog.
We do.
The Downtown Disney live stage and lawn.
Yeah,
we've been trying to figure out what to call it forever.
The lawn or the green space.
As I was writing this, I was like, we finally have a name. I don't know what a bubble experience is going to be.
It sounds fun. It sounds like just bubbles everywhere. think they're gonna have bubble machines, and it's just gonna like snow bubbles on everyone.
I mean, don't we already have that with like the kids with their little bubble wands all over the park?
No, you gotta think bigger, Tag.
Okay,
think bigger.
We won't be there in July to experience this.
You're gonna think a bubble wand is nothing compared to this bubble party. In my mind, is what I'm imagining. I don't know for sure, but that's my thought.
And a DJ.
You're gonna feel like you're under the sea.
Downtown Disney live.
It'll be fun. I think I love this area so much. There's always something fun and cool happening down at the Downtown Disney Live stage and lawn.
One last criticism for this. This name is ridiculous. Bubbles Experience at Downtown Disney District presented by Disney Junior's Ariel. Say that three times fast.
Just call it the Bubble Experience.
It is the Bubble Experience, but like they want it to be called that big long thing. That's why I put it in quotes because I was like,
goodness. The thing that's kind of nice about it, though, is at least the name gives you very... very good. You have an idea of where this is happening.
Sure.
So it's not like people are like, where's the bubble? Where are the bubbles happening? Where's the bubble experience? Oh, you mean the bubble experience at Downtown Disney? Oh, it's in Downtown Disney.
And who's presenting it? Disney Junior's Ariel. Anyway.
Yeah.
A highly anticipated restaurant has soft opened in Downtown Disney. Din Tai Fung started serving guests on June 24th, the day we're recording, or the day
after we're recording. No, the day before.
We're recording this with a limited menu. The official opening will be sometime in July. Guests can make reservations for the soft opening through the Din Tai Fung website.
Yeah, so you cannot walk up to experience the soft open. If you want to get in before the official grand opening, you do need to make reservations online. Of course, we have a link in our show notes. So this is something that you're anticipating and super excited to go do. We'll have that link for you, too. We were really, really hoping, because the walls came down a week or two before our trip, and we could see all sorts of movement in Din Tai Fung while we were there last week. We were, like, so hoping that maybe by some Disney miracle, they would just happen to quietly soft open while we were there. Well, they opened 2 days after we left, but that's okay. I was kind of surprised that they announced the soft opening, because I feel usually soft openings like quietly happen and they don't, it's not announced typically, but with reservations, they do have control over how many people they're serving at a time.
I'm on the Din Tai Fung website right now, and if we were in California, which we are not, there was one time slot left.
Look at that.
For today. And nothing available for tomorrow or the next day. So
keep checking.
Ooh, they've got lots of no availability. Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Just keep checking. You never know.
I'm very excited for this restaurant. I was a little worried about pricing, but it looks like their pricing is pretty affordable.
Well, and the other thing you have to remember is it's family style. So it's meant for you to buy a couple of things to share.
I'm just very excited for this whole thing, because I really like Asian cuisine, and I think like having like dumplings and stuff like that's going to be really cool. So I'm very excited for this.
Well, there have been quite a few closures at Disneyland and all around the resort, with even more coming in August. Starting on August 5th, the Disneyland Railroad will be closed, along with Space Mountain, Turtle Talk with Crush, and everyone brace yourself, the Animation Academy. We don't have reopening dates yet, but it is good that they are keeping attractions and experiences maintained.
I was thinking about this. So the Disneyland Railroad, I feel like, makes sense, because this will be during that time that they're doing a lot of construction on
they're
Tiana's.
They're going to be doing a lot over there.
So I'm guessing that, like, just to kind of keep that all going or whatever, that's the reasoning for that one. Space Mountain, I have no idea. Turtle Talk and Animation Academy, I feel like those things don't go down for maintenance right after.
No,
so I'm thinking it's time to refresh. You were saying before we started recording that it would be good to have like new benches and stuff in there.
Yeah, so like the Animation Academy. So when we were there in December, there was actually a couple of benches that they had blocked off that like had do not sit on them. So the benches can use some TLC, even just the like, the pads on the benches, the colors of the fabric are less vibrant. You know, it's been quite a while.
Yeah.
If I were in charge, which we know I'm not, but if I were in charge, I think it'd be amazing if they installed like something to make it more like you have a desk than having to try and balance those little boards on your knees. It'd be such a cool experience.
Teresa wants the, like...
I know it's not going to happen, but Teresa, I think that'd be so cool.
The E-Ticket Animation yes. Academy experience.
Yes.
You got to go become an animator for that, Teresa.
I think that'd be so cool.
What do you think about...
My other thought with the train.
Ones. Yeah.
What else is being worked on right now as they're redoing the Haunted Mansion queue and the courtyard between the Haunted Mansion and Tiana's Palace? Oh, that train station depot. So I'm thinking that between that and Tiana's, that's the reason that they're not going to be running the train. Because right now, the station is all under wraps. You do still stop at the station. Nobody gets on and off. But they need that spot for the train to run, because that's where they top off for the train to be able to be steam-powered and go. So I wonder if something's going on that's going to prevent them from being able to fill up.
I also wonder if they're going to use the opportunity to finally get that building that caught fire fixed, too.
That's another thing, too. Yeah.
So there's a lot going on over on the west side of the park.
It's sad, but it makes sense.
Well, something new has appeared on the stage in the Golden Horseshoe. It isn't entertainment, unfortunately, but a display for Celebrate Soulfully. The new display highlights black music in America at the turn of the 20th century. The exhibit is on the stage, so until it leaves, there will not be any live music or performances.
Yeah, so it's interesting, because I feel like there was such an opportunity here, because it's celebrating music. So this seems like a great place to celebrate music with live performances. So it's interesting to me that instead it's just set pieces and it's instruments on a stage instead of those instruments being played. So I'm curious, because we went in there for Pride Night. For the line dancing for Pride Night. They must have cleaned, because this was installed before we were in the parks, but the display was not up. The stage was clear for the Pride Night events. So, I don't know. It's interesting. I'm glad that it's not just a nothing stage, because that would be really sad. But I feel like there would have been an opportunity to switch up entertainment here and to showcase some black artists instead.
Yeah, I agree. I wish there'd be more stuff, you know, more live entertainment stuff going on in the parks. And it seems like they're cutting back a little bit right now.
Instead of talking about black music, that would have been awesome to be able to hear those different types of music performed live. Summer is just starting, but Disney is already preparing for the holidays. At Disneyland, the holiday season will kick off on November 15th with returning traditions like Festival of the Holidays, attraction overlays, and, of course, winter decor. The new wintertime attire for Mickey, Minnie, and their friends was also unveiled.
I think it's interesting. I think we talked about this last year, too, that they've gotten into this thing where every year they're getting new costumes.
They didn't used to do that. This is more of a recent thing than not, because it used to always be the same holiday outfits. But yeah, now each year they get a new refreshed look. This year it's kind of reminiscent of like postal work, like postal, like mail and stuff. So Mickey kind of looks like a letter carrier. Mm. Minnie's got a quill, like a quill pen for writing her holiday cards to be mailed out. But yeah, she also looks a little bit like one of like Santa's helpers. She almost looks like that, like, kind of style. But yeah, it's supposed to be more about like letter writing, holiday card writing. It's kind of like festive postal themed.
How do you feel about the fact that they're holding off until November 15th? I feel like that's very short.
Hope that means we do not have snow on the castle before Halloween. That is my biggest hope, because typically it's about a 2-week period. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping, with the holidays being pushed back to kick off on the 15th, that means all of the Halloween decor will be packed and put away, and all, like, it won't be this colliding of holidays that we've had. And I get it. It takes time to put snow on the castle. I totally understand that doesn't just poof happen overnight. But it's always bothered me that there's snow on the castle before it's Halloween.
I totally agree. And it's such a centerpiece, right? And like,
if you're going to do that, lean into it. Put Jack Skellington as Sandy Claus up there.
So do it in August is what you're saying?
No. But if you're going to have snow on the castle, at least pull it back into the Halloween theme.
Sure.
And you've got the perfect franchise to be able to do that with.
Well, of course, along with the holiday announcement, some merchandise was also previewed. Traditional knit sweaters, cardigans, and pullover sweatshirts will be available, along with spirit jerseys, headwear, and more. To see it all for yourself, head on over to the link in our show notes, because there is quite a lot to see.
There's a lot to see. There's lots and lots of ears. There's even bucket hat ears. There's like a Santa bucket hat with ears. It's cute. If I was a bucket hat person... I would do this because it's like the red velvety look with the furry white trim. It looks to be an embroidered holly with a Mickey embellishment with the holly berries. Yep. And then you've got like velvety Mickey ears.
What do you think of the like ugly Christmas sweater ears?
I'm going to have a problem because I really like both ears. So there's like the quote unquote ugly Christmas sweater ears, which are really, really cute. But then there's also this green set that has little Mickey like twinkle lights on them. Not actual lights, just like twinkle lights painted on there with a really fun foil gold bow. I'm really torn between those two ears. There's also a Santa Mickey headband for those that aren't interested. It's nice because it's a great mixture because there isn't a bow on that one. So yes, anybody can wear that and not feel, you know, people that like bows, people that don't like bows. It's a great mix for everyone.
They also have a...
Look, there's a new magic band just
Mickey
for you, Tay.
Mickey-eared onesie.
I just spied in the background of the magic band photo, they're going to have a deep, like, spruce green spirit jersey with those little Mickey light prints on them.
Is that not what this is?
Mm-hmm. That makes me excited. I really like that. I really like that design or that print.
How many families do you think are going to be running around the parks in these onesies?
All of the cool ones, clearly. You're just jealous.
I'm just not a onesie person. But they have pajama pants for Hanukkah-inspired.
So
they have some stockings. They have,
bugs.
What is this? This is a decorative pillow.
Ornaments, some, of course.
Yeah.
Plushes. I'm really excited because they have this adorable baby Mickey, like baby Santa Mickey, that has a bib on that says, "My first Christmas 2024. I'm totally getting that for my niece because it will be her first Christmas this year. And of course, I need to like turn her to the Disney side as early in life as I possibly can.
Oh, I kind of like this. Okay, I don't like spirit jerseys, but I do like the design of this spirit jersey that's only for Walt Disney World. The Mickey's Very Merry Christmas
Party.
Looks really, it's cool looking.
Look at that. Stitch and Angel even have their little holiday outfits on for the plush versions. Yeah, there's a lot of really cute stuff. There's, again, Disney World specific, but Jollywood Night ears and a Jollywood Night lug bag. This is crazy. If this is just the sneak peek of the holiday merchandise items, I can only imagine how many there will be.
Pull them all out.
Yeah. Well, a new storefront has come to Main Street, USA. On Center Street, Main Street Painters Supply has moved in. There is no shop here, just the facade is part of a sponsorship deal with the paint manufacturer PPG. PPG is the official paint of Walt Disney World and Disneyland.
You know, so one of the things that the Mice Chat article brought up that I had totally forgotten about is right next to this. So if you're over on Center Street by the lockers, it's on kind of the left side of that same wall where you access the lockers. And I was like, oh, okay, I didn't even notice that this spot that is now the Painter Supply was even here, to be honest. But they reminded me that right next to it was an ice cream window. Why don't they have the ice cream window anymore? I just don't know.
What do you mean?
This,
like,
this used to be
themed?
Like you could get ice cream out of it.
Oh, you could get. Okay, I was gonna say, was it themed?
Yeah.
Or was it an actual operation?
I think it was
window?
Like soft serve or something you could get for there. Mm. And I vaguely remember that. It's been a long time, but I was like, they should bring that back. But I also think it'd be hard in this small area to have a line or a queue and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's probably why. But this looks nice.
They
mean, it's
a really
not
nice
intrusive.
Job.
Yeah.
They did a really, really nice job. And if you didn't know that this was a sponsored storefront, you wouldn't know that this was a sponsored storefront. It fits in seamlessly with the Main Street decor and with the Main Street feel. They did a great job.
Already working because I had never heard of PPG paint any before. And now I do know about PPG paint.
Now
so it's
know.
Already working wonders.
This, you know what's even more embarrassing, Tag? this had to have been there and unveiled while we were there.
But we didn't.
We stood in that little courtyard for quite some time. The group of four of us. There were two mornings that Vern and I were in that courtyard right after we had gone through the Starbucks line. Side note, two mornings we were in there right after 8 a.m. and there's no line. I mean, no line in Starbucks. We walked right up to the front counter. It was wild. That never happens. And it happened twice. I thought the first time was a fluke. But didn't even notice. That's how well this blends in. We didn't even, like, it didn't stand out to us like, oh, what's that? So that's how well it blends in.
Yoo-hoo! Hello, everybody! It's me, Heimlich! Mein stomach is so empty! Hey, help me to go find something to eat! Come on, everybody! Here we go!
Well, this week for Snack Chat, we're doing something a little bit different. We have our churro aficionado, producer Vern, here with his segment of a segment. Vern, what is your segment?
We're calling this Churro Talk with Vern. Kind of like Turtle Talk with Crush, but not.
Churros and Vern. Got it. Yes. All right. Take us on the journey.
All right. So, as any longtime listener of the show would know, I am the churro connoisseur. I do love me a churro, and I like not just a regular churro. I mean, of course, a regular churro is good, but I like to try all the churros and really sample the savory scrumptiousness that can be a churro. I've worked my way through the park, and I tried on our most recent visit 7 different churros. And tonight, I want to talk about the pineapple churro that can be found right away when you've walked into the park, right there at the head or the top of Main Street near the train station. This one was given to me by listeners Richard, Katya, and Penny. This churro is subtly flavored, more just like pineapple juice, has the normal sugar with the cinnamon to it that you would find on any churro. It comes with a side dipping that has a cookie butter flavoring that has kind of a subdued pineapple flavor to it, but it's still pretty rich. It's kind of like a Dole Whip. And this particular churro was delightful. 10 out of 10. I will be trying that one again if I get a chance.
Did you think this one was better than your churro? I don't remember what the heck was it. The spicy
chili cheese churro? That one will go down in history as one of the best churros ever. That one I found at Willie's Churros in DCA. Was that last year's trip?
I think so.
Yes. Yeah, that one will go down in history as one of the best churros I ever had. But this pineapple churro was definitely a delightful churro that I enjoyed very much. The pineapple was not overpowering, but just very flavorful and good. If you appreciate a Dole Whip and that level of pineapple goodness, and if you appreciate a churro, this is a blend of both worlds that you will not let you down.
So according to the Disney explanation of what these are, the pineapple churro is a classic churro rolled in pineapple-flavored sugar, while the pineapple cookie dipping sauce is pineapple-flavored cream cheese icing with vanilla cookie crumbles. So I also tried this churro, and I probably had very strange looks. Katya was kind of the same way, where we were kind of like, I don't know if I like this or not, kind of a thing. I think it was almost, dare I say, a little bit too pineapple-y for me, which this is coming from a Dole Whip aficionado, but something about the cookie butter with the pineapple churro almost made it just taste like the tang of churro or the tang of pineapple to me and kind of canceled out the sweetness. So that's why it was good, but I was also just confused.
Out of 10, what would you rate it?
Out of 10?
That's what Vern just rated, 10 out of 10.
I gave it a 10 out of 10. We'll try again.
I'd probably give it like a 6.5.
I think I tried this one too, but it did not stick out enough for me to remember it crazily. But I remember thinking it was fine, so I would probably give it like a 7 out of 10 maybe.
Yeah.
And I didn't try, I don't think I tried the cookie butter thing at all.
That was the real selling point.
Yeah.
It was better.
Once I got that richness of the cookie butter.
It was much better with the Like, there was more flavor with the dipping sauce. The pineapple sugar was, it was just like a hint of churro, or a hint of pineapple. If you didn't know it was pineapple flavored, you may not have been able to pinpoint what the flavored sugar was.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
All right, Vern, so the ultimate question. If you could only have this churro or a plain churro ever.
Ever.
Which one would you pick?
Like, from now until eternity, you could only have the one, that churro.
Yeah, there's only one churro. Is Ooh. It this pineapple one, or is it the regular churro?
I would have to go with the pineapple.
Really?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I do love the plain churro. It always has a special place in my heart. It's the original.
The only churro you're ever eating for the rest of your life could be plain or pineapple.
Well, if it's only between those two, yes.
Yeah, plain or pineapple, but that's all you get the rest of your life. You'd rather have the pineapple over the plain.
I'd go pineapple.
All right.
If it's between those two, yep.
Look at that.
Yep.
I think I would have picked the regular standard churro.
I probably would have picked regular, too.
But I'm also a fan of the regular churro.
Sure. However, spoiler alert, in future episodes, there are specialty churros that we had that I would pick for the rest of my life.
Over a standard churro.
Yep, the standard. I'm not a standard diehard, that's the only type of churro I want to have person. It's just the pineapple churro just wasn't the one for me.
See, for me, I would stick with the classic churro because we're not ruling out dipping sauces. And I can pair it with a bunch of dipping sauces.
I feel like you just changed the rules to benefit yourself, sir.
I'm just saying. I also am sad that Vern did not get a chance, because they did not offer it any longer, to try the cannoli churro.
Oh, that was
because
good.
I think he would have liked that one, too.
I think so, too.
It was good.
Maybe next time.
All right.
So that is our first edition of
Churro Talk
with Vern.
Yes.
We keep wanting to say Churro Chat, but it's Churro Talk.
Churro Talk.
Churro Talk
with Vern, a sub thing of Churro, of Snack Chat.
A suburb of Snack Chat.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you, Vern, for, you know, as somebody would say, doing the Lord's work and eating all of the churros.
For science.
It was a pleasure.
I do think, though, you did miss one churro, because I don't think you ever got back to the coconut one.
That was actually kind of an executive decision that I made because I don't like coconut.
There you go.
And so I thought I'm not going to be able to give a fair review because I knew going in not liking coconut, I'd have a biased opinion.
Sure.
There was no possible way for me to give a fair review of the churro itself. I was automatically going to say this tastes terrible.
Well, there we go.
Yep. So, to anybody out there that wants to give that one a chance and send in their own review, I am open to reading it on the air. That is at Willie's in DCA. Check out the coconut pineapple churro and let us know what you think of it, because I can't give an unbiased opinion.
All right. Well, Vern, we will see you next week in Churro Talk with Vern.
Thanks, Tig.
Well, if you enjoy listening to the show, please consider rating and reviewing the show on your podcast app. It helps other Disney fans become weekly tiers and part of the community.
DL Weekly announces the boarding of the Trivia Express, nonstop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Well, hello, it's Trivia Land time. Welcome, welcome. I hope you all are excited.
No, we're not. We had a preview of Trivia Land. Not really a preview, but we just were told it was going to be a challenging night. So,
And these are all producer James questions, too.
I'm going to think positively. We're fresh from being in the park for 5 days. We had to absorb some new park knowledge, right? Had to have noticed.
I hope so.
And remembered some obscure details, perhaps.
We will find out, won't we?
I mean, I spent 3 times in the Animation Academy. Maybe it'll be like a hidden
it's
thing.
It's all Animation Academy questions. Like,
just for people to know, Teresa skipped out on going to the Incredicoaster because we were going to go ride it without her. And she's like, I'm just going to go Animation Academy.
Well, I was going to go. I had a choice. I could have gone with you, but I'm like, but the Animation Academy.
See, what's interesting is I'm trying to figure out what's happened, because the last couple trips, you have been like, I have been with Guardians with the Incredicoaster. You're like, oh, I don't know. I don't need to go, or I don't really feel like going. I'm like, what happened to the Incredicoaster?
It's fun, but if I do it, I want to wait in the standby line, and I want the front row.
We could have.
You like doing the single
rider. Well, the single rider just gets us on faster.
Yeah. I don't want to do single rider. So it's one of those, you can do single rider and get through it fast. Sure. And I'll do Animation Academy.
I just want to shout out to Keegan, who is the awesomest little person to ride the Incredicoaster with. He was so excited, and for the very first time, he had ridden Incredicoaster a ton, but had never put his hands up, and he put his hands up when I was single ridering next to him, and he was just a ball of energy.
His family was in the
two rows behind me, and so when I showed up, I was asking him how many times he had ridden it, and he said, oh, a bunch of times. And he asked how many times I had ridden it, and I said a bunch of times. And then I said, are you going to put your hands up? And he's like, I've never put my hands up on this one. Anyway, he was a great kid. So if he's listening or his family's listening, shout out to him, because that was a really enjoyable experience just to go with somebody new, but also doing something for the first time, like putting your hands up.
All right, let's zoom over to Trivia Land.
Back to Trivia Land.
Are you sure? Are you ready?
No, but we will, yes.
It's a really long queue, I get it. Sometimes you just have to wait for Trivia Land.
So do we need to get in the single rider line for Trivia Land? Yep.
Trivia Land. We're fast past lightning laning it to the front.
Teresa just wants to rip the Band-Aid off. Let's go.
Great. Hmm. All right, so I'm curious of how well you were paying attention to, names of things as we were in the park.
Nope.
One of these, I know Teresa might remember us talking about, and we'll find out. So, question number one.
I think you have an advantage.
Who is the face character that you can meet in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge that is credited with setting up the Resistance base near Blackspire Outpost on Batuu?
I don't remember her name.
She
wears an orange jacket.
Yeah, she's the character who's just for the land, right?
Yep.
She was actually first introduced in the Phasma novel, so...
Oh, yes, because I've read those cover to cover.
It is an amazing book.
I don't remember her name. I can't even try and make up her name.
A bunch of other Star Wars names came into my head, like Cal Kestis and Kat Sokka and a lot of Ks for some reason. But I don't know. This is like a James Verne question, because I feel like Verne would know and you would know.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this, though, because when Verne and I were... You two had slept in that morning, and Verne and I were just chilling in Galaxy's Edge, and we saw all sorts of characters, including her. It's actually really fun, because Verne had his R2-D2 ears on, and R2-D2 was out, and they came over to Verne multiple times, and we took a couple of photos, and she was there too, but we talked about her name and I can't remember what it is. So nothing. I got nothing.
I would also like to say for the record, James and I stayed till close on those other nights where you and Vern had left earlier. So we got the same amount of time in the park.
That's right.
Well, people watching our social media just thought we had not shown up to the show.
Do you know what's amazing? We have a whole discussion topic later to talk about all the different
I just
park
can't contain
stuff.
It.
Trivia Land is just so Trivia great Land. That we just have so many good big thoughts
okay,
and feelings.
Okay, well, what's question two?
Question two. What is the name of the train operation that guests ride on with Goofy on Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway?
Oh! Do you know this?
You know what's funny is I feel like I remember seeing the seal or the symbol or whatever it was, and it was obviously not committed to memory for me. Let me think. It's the park that they're going to, right?
It is. Yep. That is the same name.
Oh.
That is the hint I have ready for you.
Oh. What was the park?
I have mine written down.
Teresa, what was the park?
No, you got to do your answer first.
It's the whatever park... trade company or whatever.
She's not letting you hitch your caboose to this one.
Wow, suddenly somebody's whatever.
Just to prove
okay, well, what's
down.
Your answer?
Run amok railway,
because is it run amok park? I guess that sounds right. Anyway, I'm not getting the point. Anyway, go ahead.
All right, number three. Name any of the droids that are part of the Star Tours The Adventure Continues keyword story that aren't C-3PO and R2-D2 or Rex. He doesn't count. He's not active.
I don't know the names of them.
Think about the luggage scanner, or the human security scanner, the safety officer, or the pilot that was supposed to pilot. Just one. That's all I'm hoping for.
There's a probe droid. Does that count?
Nope.
Just going to say there was a droid. That was a droid.
It was a droid. I mean, I suppose if you can give me
the
probe droid's call sign.
Do they say the names in the queue? Or are we just supposed to know it?
Good question. They say two of the names.
Because they, because the guy over the intercom yells at the security droid, right? Like, to get back to work, or are they paying attention or something?
I think that's one of them. But that would make it three that I feel like they say at some point, so.
And then the pilot guy, I think, also gets mentioned at some point, too.
Yep.
They do. I don't remember what it is. I'm trying to remember. Bye-bye. What's her name?
I don't think they say her name either.
No, they talk about how it's, like, equipped with, you know, whatever. I don't know.
I'm too busy chatting with everybody in this queue to pay attention. The probe droid
was my one win, because there's also the little guys, I can't remember, that have, like, the helmet heads. They, like, fix stuff. I don't remember what those droids are called.
Oh, the little...
But they exist outside of the Star Tour. Yeah,
Yeah, because they were in, like, episode one. They're, like, with the little eyeball.
Mm-hmm.
The little pit droids, yep.
Yeah.
I don't remember who it was. One of you two was talking in the queue or someone about, like, oh, so that's why C-3PO's in the cockpit, because he finally saw the beginning of the story.
Yeah, that
story.
Was me, but I don't remember. And I remember them saying, like, equipped with the whatever pilot droids. I'm like, but I don't remember what the pilot droid was.
What was I watching?
Because it was a something, like, the pilot droid is in the name, but it's a pilot droid.
I was watching something. I don't remember what it was, but the... C-3PO and R2 that are in the queue are actually from the movie.
Yeah, you didn't know. Yeah, they're the screen used.
Yeah, which I thought was cool.
I can't remember.
I don't know, James.
It's okay.
Is this...
We'll just have to ride Star Tours more often.
Did we already answer the one you thought we'd get?
Yep.
Okay.
This is the one that I will be impressed if you get.
We got this, Teresa.
In the Main Street Cinema, there are six shorts playing, or at least that's what's listed online. Can you tell me the six shorts that are playing on loop?
Yeah, there was Steamboat Willie.
Plain Crazy.
This is why James was like, can we go in here? I've never been in here before. And we went in and he looked in and was like, oh, cool.
It makes it a valid question for me at that point.
Because you've been in there.
And you've been in there.
Yes, but the only one I ever pay attention to is Steamboat Willie.
Yep. Because that's the one that has audio. The other ones don't have any audio playing.
I don't even remember. I don't remember the other ones.
I also remember Perfect Picnic, but that's not in that attraction.
Not there yet.
No. Yeah.
One of these days, can we talk about how poor of dog owners Mickey and Minnie are?
Poor Pluto. Yeah, I just say that in the queue for Mickey and Minnie, or not the queue, but the pre-show for Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. I'm always like, poor Pluto.
And Goofy looks sickly. But that's just the animation style. Nothing?
He gets locked in the trunk. He gets, like...
He gets hit in the head with the basket.
With the picnic basket. Locked in the trunk. And he gets bounced out of the trunk.
In the attraction, he goes down the drain.
Down the drain.
I don't know if James heard me every time we went and rode Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway this time, but every time they're in the trunk...
Leave it for the discussion topic. We're still not finished with Trivia Land.
Because I always say that, oh?
Oh, yeah, I heard that every time.
Okay.
We're still not finished with Trivia Land.
I mean, that's four questions done, so we have completed.
We didn't even begin to try and do six, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You can throw out four more guesses, because I've heard Steamboat William
playing
crazy.
I don't have any.
No other guesses. I'm wondering if the short that Donald's introduced in is in there, but I can't remember off the top of my head what that short's called. Anyways. All right.
Four questions down. We got your answers.
Yeah, not good ones.
I'll tell you if they're
right.
Can
we have producer Vern back? His questions are better. Not as
rude.
Ruthless. Not as ruthless. What?
I'm just going to Pluto it.
Oh.
Whatever. Now I'm just going to make you wait until after the discussion topic to do the answers.
Well, for this week's discussion topic, we are finishing up talking about the remainder of our trip, which includes some highlights from Pixar Fest that we hadn't experienced yet last time you heard from us, a fun Pixar-themed talk at the Pixar Place Hotel, and, drumroll please, of course, Pride Night. So where would you like to begin?
Where did we leave off is what I'd like to know. I forgot where we left off.
So we had left off before we had gone to DCA yet for the trip. So anything DCA, we had not yet experienced.
Yeah, so we went into DCA, and for this trip, we finally ate in San Francisco.
laughing internally because this was like a highlight for Tag. You ate there multiple times.
It was good food.
No, I know.
I think producer Vern liked it too because he also enjoyed his food. You liked your food that you got
there.
I know,
I did too, but I just forgot that that was kind of our first thing that we did in DCA. And then
we went over and got food.
Lots of food. Lots of. You basically tried almost
some stuff.
Everything at each of the locations.
Not true, because I didn't do
I know. You almost did have a meal at each location.
Yeah, because I did Lucky Fortune and Aunt Cass. Mm-hmm. So things that I've had there in general, this is not in chronological order by any stretch, but I had the beef bulgogi burrito, which I thought was really good. The highlights, funny enough, the bulgogi burrito was great in and of itself, but it also came with garlic chips, which were kind of like, what's that stuff that you really like that's that fried?
Chicharron?
It's like chicharron almost. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really, really good. I also had the yaki udon without the... Because you can get it with crispy chicken, but I did not get it with the chicken, which I also thought was good. Teresa tried some of Vern's. You just got to be a little careful because it has mushrooms mm-hmm. in it. But I thought that that was also very good. Between
the
two...
soy and hoisin sauce, like those noodles so just good. Soaked it up like sponges. Oh my God. If I could get a bowl of just the noodles and vegetables, no mushrooms, since I do have an issue with mushrooms, that easily would be something I'd get every single time. So it makes me really, really sad that it comes with mushroom. Perhaps, maybe,
you could probably ask
I can
for
try going, you know, I wouldn't be, I don't know if I'd be able to do mobile order without mushroom, but maybe next time, standby, I could ask if that's an option or not. But oh, it is so good.
And then at Aunt Cass's, I had the chilled shrimp soba noodle salad, which was very good.
Didn't you say you liked that better, though, than
I did.
The udon noodles?
I did like it better than the udon noodles, but it's really up there with the burrito. The bulgogi burrito was very good as well. And then I also got the dessert. I got the Japanese-style fluffy cheesecake, which was okay. I don't know if I'd order it again.
You know, I had high hopes for the Japanese-style fluffy cheesecake, and it did not meet my expectations.
Yeah.
It was not what I was envisioning it to be. I did, from Aunt Cass's Cafe, I tried the honey lemonade. I really enjoyed this. This was Minute Maid lemonade, zero sugar, with yuzu puree, with passion fruit and strawberry popping spheres. It was really, really delicious and refreshing. But for dinner, I had... this is going to sound ridiculous that it took me this long to actually just order these from Cocina Cucamonga, but I finally had the birria tacos, and oh.
One of the days we were over there, I think like a third of the people in the land had those. Because
they know what's up. They are so, so good. So
I didn't try
juicy,
them from you.
So delicious. That's okay, because it's a new must-have every trip staple. So good.
Well, do you know what my must-have staple
was?
Dare
I say, you might come at me for this. I think I like it better than Bengal barbecue.
That's okay.
Because Bengal barbecue, for me, the meat hasn't been as tender. I keep getting not good pieces of meat on my skewers, which can dampen the experience because they're more chewy and fatty. But this, oh my gosh,
I don't think we had any Bengal barbecue this trip.
We did not have Bengal barbecue at all.
My new staple, because I got it three times on this trip, was the Thai tea.
Yes.
Which comes with salt, sea salt cream and brown sugar boba. I love this
thing.
For the
record, do you want to know what's a fun fact about you and the Thai tea? You might not even realize this fun fact about you and the Thai tea. That was the first non-soda drink I got you to order at Disneyland. Because otherwise, you just always went for the soda. You didn't go for any of the fun specialty drinks. But the Thai tea was the first one.
But do you know why? Sidetrack for this. Do you know why? Because I feel like budget-wise, I feel like it's much easier to pay, although now I'm looking at the prices, they're not that much more expensive.
No, they aren't.
But the fountain beverages used to be in the $3 to $4 range, where these were always at the like $6 to $7 range. Mm-hmm. And I always felt that I got more drink out of my fountain beverage than I did out of, because in fairness, and I think you would agree with this, they heavily ice all of these drinks. Like there's a lot of ice in them.
Doesn't matter if it's
so you're not getting
a specialty
ton
beverage.
Of drink from it. But with the boba things, I feel like they put less ice in them.
Yeah,
for
I was gonna
reason.
Say, I think some of these specialty beverages have less ice.
Sure,
it's not like a whole, like they fill the cup with ice and then put the stuff in. It seems like there's less ice because the ice for me with how much I slowly sip these drinks. Mm-hmm. Typically, when I'm done, there's really not much ice left in my empty cup because it either sure. There just wasn't that much to begin with, but then it also melts well.
I would drink that like every day, by the way.
The other thing that I tried, I don't even think you didn't even want to try a bite of it. I did get the Baymax Macaron, which was also very cute, very fun themed. It was good too. It wasn't like the most amazing macaron I've ever had in my entire life, but it was good. It was a solid choice.
Producer James, do you remember what you had in San Francisco?
Yes, I had the mac and cheese in the sourdough bowl from Aunt Cass's. That was pretty good. It was a lot of sourdough for a mac and cheese thing, and it doesn't quite get soaked up like soup does, so not necessarily my favorite vessel, but the mac and cheese was good. And then I also had the chicken sandwich from the cookery. I don't remember the actual name of it. That was delicious. It was fried very well. The toppings and the sauces were great. Had
the
Karachi-inspired
crispy chicken sandwich?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, so that was all really good. And then it had the garlic chips that you really enjoyed.
I just want to order like a bag of those garlic chips on the side because I thought that was the best.
So moving on from food,
yes.
We also went because we felt like we needed to. There's a lot of entertainment offerings that we've been reporting on that are either getting cut back or being cut in total. So we made it a point to go over to enjoy the Doctor Strange show one last time because it is coming to an end and it will not be going the next time that we're in the park. So we went over and checked that out and it's still a really fun show. It's all every time that I've been there, it's been full. So
yeah.
I'm curious why the decision was made. Part of me is hoping, and maybe this is wishful thinking, but part of me is hoping that the show's being paused so that they can refresh it because it has been the same show since Avengers Campus opened. So it would be fun for it to get a little bit of a refresh because we don't even see it every trip and I can almost like, oh, now he's going to do this. Oh, yeah. Now he's going to do that. So it feels a little, if you've seen it once and twice, then you kind of realize like, oh, okay, it's not super repeatable, if that makes sense.
And yet we have seen it a bunch of times.
It's still fun, but like it doesn't keep you on your toes, if that makes sense. So it could a refresh, I think, would do it well. The other thing that I think we need to mention is during Pixar Fest, we were failures because we kind of forgot about this until halfway through our second day. But there are 50, that's right, 50 Pizza Planet trucks hidden throughout the resort area. So this is when we kind of were really trying to hone in and find Pizza Planet trucks. And boy, does DCA have a lot. There's a couple different ways you can do this. Disney does not have an official list that they've printed. I wish they did. I wish they put something in the app where you could like check off that you found each one of them or
right.
something. That'd be really fun. Or maybe go to City Hall, get a checklist.
That'd
but
be
I
helpful
feel like,
for like foodie guides and stuff.
I feel
too.
Like they could do that in the app and that'd be really like a really fun interactive thing to do. Disney does not. However, fans have kind of created this. So you can Google Pizza Planet trucks in Disney hidden in Disneyland and there is a list. So if you do need some help or some direction as to where to go to find them,
you'll
you
need some help
that.
For some of these.
Some of them are tough. And Tag is like the spoiler king.
Yep.
He doesn't mind spoilers at all. I didn't want to be spoiled, but I needed some sort of like general idea of where to maybe look. So he would look to see where things were and then say things like, okay, Little Mermaid, somewhere inside the attraction. Sure. And that's all he would say. He wouldn't even tell me which scene. Actually, I don't think we knew about that one. I think I found that one naturally. But
I will.
You'd give us kind of a general area, so we weren't just...
But some of them are, like, impossible. So, on the list I found, some people were doing photos, so you could kind of get an idea where it was. They had a very blurry, and I don't know how you would ever get one that wasn't blurry, of one on the Matterhorn.
Yeah, because you zip on
past. Now, I rode the Matterhorn twice, knowing it where kind of it was, and both times I was like, oh, there it was! Oh, there it was. And, like, my brain didn't even compute what it was. Like, it was so fast.
We were being nerds, and I wanted pictures of each one that we...
Yeah.
I wanted, like, my own pictures of each ones we found so that I could remember what they were, because they're all themed to wherever it is that they're hidden. Well, mostly. Most of them are all themed to wherever they're hidden. There are some that are not. But the one that was in The Little Mermaid, I saw it, but when I saw it, it was, I didn't have, like, I couldn't get my phone out and up fast enough to get a picture. And of course, it's dark, so your phone needs to, like,
that was a tricky one.
Take a couple seconds. So we got off the attraction, and I looked at Tag and James, because Vern was also very into, like, getting pictures of all of them. I looked at them, I'm like, we need to go back on. And they're like, what? Why? I'm like, I found the Pizza Planet truck, but I didn't get a photo of it. So then we went back on, all of us were at the ready, and we got a photo. So that was really fun. Some of them are obvious, some of them not at all.
I want to say, speaking of found things, we mentioned this, I think, a little bit in the discussion about the Waltland tour, but we went on Soarin', and sure enough, there is the hangar, the central, the Grand Central Air Terminal is in the photo that has the Lockheed Vega aircraft in it. So if you want to see that air terminal that Bob Gurr talked about, it is actually inside of Soarin', like we thought was going to be there. I also want to mention that I finally went back on Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout. because I had not been for a long time.
See, I think that's the difference between, like, Incredicoaster, I'm impartial. Like, I'm good to go on it. I'm good to not go on it. I'm just particular that if I go on it, I want the front row, because it's just way more fun.
Made me sit in the front row of Guardians.
And you've kind of gotten to the actively avoid having to go on Guardians.
We were poised to sit in the second row, and Teresa asked to be in the front row.
I wanted to be in the front row because
she took my corner safe spot from me.
They weren't able to fill our gantry lift, which was totally fine. So the front row would have been empty. So I asked the cast member, hey, can we sit in the front row? And they're like, yeah, we got you. Go ahead. So I went in, I tried offering it to you, and you're like, no. It actually worked out probably better for you, because there was a handlebar in front of him on that seat. And I was joking, because the corner seats, there's like if you look up the like safety cage on top, there's an empty spot right above the corner spot. So I was like, well.
I also feel like this time, because Vern asked about this too, I do not remember getting this particular creature before. Like, we got one of the like rotations that we don't normally get when I've been on it. Also,
with a different song,
David from Fresh Baked has been reporting, which makes sense why the lines have been so long, is one of the three shafts were down.
Yep, we did see that when we were there too. One, but it must be down for a while, not just happen to be down a couple days while we were there. Another really big fun thing that we got to do and experience while in DCA was, of course, go check out the Pixar Pals Parade, which it's
Better
called
Together.
Better Together. Yep. Which this, you know, I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to come right out front and say it. This was getting a lot of flack online. A lot of people were underwhelmed with this parade, not saying the nicest things about this parade. I really enjoyed it. It did not feel too short to me. That was one of the complaints that people had, that it was a very short parade. I thought it was so fun. The new floats, because basically this was the Pixar Pals Parade Plus. They added bigger, more like newer floats. And they didn't go half on these new floats. They went all in on these new floats. That made me realize how kind of small the original floats were, because some of them were still in there, or the original units. But this was so much fun. I had a blast.
I want to call out, since you mentioned it, we watched Magic Happens one of the times, and we were near a lady who was like, somebody was asking about they were from Disney World, this person that was talking to this other person, and they were asking about if they had seen the parade over in DCA yet, and they're like, no, we're going to that next, and the person said, if you can call it a parade, and I was like, oh my goodness.
The parade's been getting not a lot of love, and I'm not understanding why. Like, it's one of those things.
I thought it was great.
When I watched some of it online, of course it feels like, oh, that was it, because it's a much, you know, you just get snippets of each thing. It's not actually standing there and experiencing the timing and the pacing and all that. That was kind of the other nice thing too, is these floats, I don't know if this was real or if it just happened to be where we were sitting, because we were sitting on the corner opposite of Carthay, so the parade floats were coming down at us and then also turning that kind of swoopy corner right in front of us. So I don't know if the parade actually moved a little bit slower and the pacing was a little bit slower than like the typical parade timing, but it felt that way. I loved that because these new floats are very, very detailed and there's a lot of characters on them. There's a lot of things to see. It was a super ton of fun. The first float was from Turning Red. It was Four Town themed. Panda May was bopping along in the middle of it, plus the Four Town guys and May's little her friend group, as well as her dad. I just love this. Her dad is in his little like cardboard panda costume, red panda costume. After that, we saw Kevin and Mr. Fredrickson from Up on the little Up float. Then it was
And Doug,
of course. Next up was the brand new Soul float, which this thing was huge. And let me tell you, Joe Gardner, he's got some moves. He was dancing his little heart out on that.
He was active for sure. After that, and that float had some like of his students or whatever playing on it or whatever, which was really nice.
The little baby souls were like popping up out of the sides.
You are gonna laugh. This is gonna be a real time Teresa tag judgment. I just realized looking at my photo that the little line characters
you
are there.
You did not just...
I did.
Tag.
I was too busy watching Joe Gardner get down. I didn't... I wasn't... Anyway. Yeah. But anyway, after that is the Inside Out float with Joy and Sadness. By the way, everything Sadness was in that we saw, my goodness, stole the show.
She's so fun.
I will say, Teresa, you've seen Inside Out too now, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Sadness was not as prominent in it as I thought she was going to be in
it. You were hoping for more sadness?
I was hoping for some more sadness. Then after that, of course, was the Luca float, which I thought was brilliantly done with the fact that there are the above water section, they are humans, and the below water section is you know their
sea monster side.
I thought it was great. I thought this float was really a creative thing. It was fun to see the characters from that movie somewhere because it's a great movie. What was nice, I thought too, about this parade and actually Pixar Fest in general was a lot of the movies that didn't get the recognition that they should have because they had came out during COVID, so they kind of went right to Disney Plus in a lot of ways.
They didn't get the theater releases.
Are finally getting like really pushed by the company, so people are like finding out about them kind of after the fact, and hopefully these things will become, you know, more classics that people remember and enjoy. Then there was the Toy Story, kind of a float with Toy Story, but also Miguel.
It was kind of like the finale float, so there was all sorts of different Pixar characters hanging out on that float.
Yeah.
The one thing I wanted to say about the Luca float was the best time to catch this float is on a bright sunshiny day, because when it's a little cloudy, the effect of the underwater portion isn't as obvious. But man, when the sun is shining, which we were lucky, it was shining in full force when we watched the parade, you can really see the details of the bottom half of the characters being the sea monster versions and the top halves being their human versions. So that's something else to kind of keep in mind. But that detail it's beautiful. It's really, really cool.
We did have a limited amount of the Pixar Fest food booth food items. So I had the pasta from Luca, which I thought was pretty basic, like a pesto with potatoes and like some fried onion kind of things. But they also had like freeze-dried green beans, which was like my least favorite thing of the whole thing. Because I was like, why don't they just have fresh green beans on there? Also, I thought the portion size was a little small, even for a food booth.
Yeah.
But also, the bowl they put it in, they filled it up so much, which I appreciate. It was hard to eat out of because everything kind of was going everywhere. You made fun of me because half of it ended up on the table. And then Teresa got her green.
It was called like the sea monster. I think that was my favorite specialty drink of the trip. It was so good. It had these jellies in the bottom, so it was basically like cut up pieces of Jello in with the beverage itself. The favorite thing, favorite specialty drink of the entire trip. For actual food, though, Vern and I decided to grab lunch over at the Paradise Garden Grill. I had the chili verde chicken flautas, and Vern had the jirache, and we both like they were amazing. I did not even get to try a bite of Vern's because he like had it gone. He really, he really, really enjoyed it. I think that again was one of his favorite things. But man, everything I feel that I've tried from the Paradise Garden Grill has always been delightful.
Yeah.
They swap that menu out with the change of each, I don't know if you want to say season or celebration
festival.
Or what, but they do swap that menu out. So it's not always the same thing. So you can't always find the chicken flautas, but it's always a hit. Like, I have sure. not had a flop from that booth or from that location yet.
We also made a mistake, and I just want to talk about this.
Did?
So others don't make the mistake.
Oh, yes.
We were under the impression that booking a reservation at the Magic Key Terrace was enough if we bought anything to get a World of Color dining package seating, and
so,
it was not.
So to expand on what Tag is saying, we didn't realize this, but for Magic Key holders, you can do a World of Color dining package at the Magic Key Terrace. However, we were looking at it from the app. The app didn't really give a ton of information. It just said, do you want to make a reservation? It's for a World of Color, you know, it was a World of Color package. It did not show if there was a prefixed meal. When you looked at the menu, it just showed the regular Magic Key Terrace menu. And so we're like, oh, perfect. We can try some of the things that we wanted to try around the parks. And then we can go here and get like drinks and an appetizer or drinks and dessert and do our like best of both worlds. We should have known better because it's never that good, right? So it is a prefix menu. So, but pro tip, they said that the Magic Key Terrace dining package, our server told us, rarely sells out. So if you're wanting to do a World of Color dining package and Carthay or Storytellers, those are sold out, you're a Magic Key holder, check the Magic Key Terrace to see if they have openings, because she said that it's actually more of an add-on than an advertised thing,
right?
If that makes sense. So, pro tip.
Yeah. We had three drinks there.
Oh my gosh, mine was so good.
Do you remember?
I had the 5-4-3-2-1, and it was so fruity and coconutty and tropical. Delightful. If that is your thing, do it.
I had the Shipwreck, which was a very different Shipwreck from
we were joking because
Trader Sam's.
Vern had got the Shipwreck earlier in the trip at Trader Sam's, and then we saw that there was a different Shipwreck on this menu, so we were making jokes, and there's a whole experience when you order the Shipwreck at Trader Sam's, so we tried to recreate that experience for James when he ordered the Magic Key Terrace Shipwreck.
Yes, it was so kind of you to do that. So,
what did you think of the Shipwreck?
I would not recommend it. That Shipwreck was a journey of flavors and experiences, and they did not make sense.
Hmm. So producer Vern had the Conestoga cocktail, which I think he enjoyed.
I think he did as well. I remember him enjoying it.
So we ended up not seeing World of Color that night, but we went back the next night to see it because we got in the virtual queue mm-hmm. the next day or whatever for it. We did go back over to Disneyland and watch the updated fireworks show.
Before we move on, we did try the Silly Symphony's churro sandwich here.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm sure Vern will probably go over. That was really, really delicious.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Well, we went over to Disneyland and saw the Fire of the Rising Moons. James is a Star Wars fan and have not seen Fire of the Rising before. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was a really nice use of the visual that you can clearly see the fireworks, at least half of the fireworks, and really embrace it. I think Star Wars music is great. It's so anthemic and it fits so well with the fireworks. You know, it's not perfectly timed out, of course, because it's not a thing. And there was the definite gap where Up is playing in the normal fireworks that they could have had the storyteller, the bard robot, do a little bit more. I would have loved to have more from the droid, but I'd watch it again. I thought it was really nice.
What did you think, Teresa, seeing it this time with the droid?
Oh, well, in the viewing area. So yeah. We saw it in a different area of Batuu than when we saw it the first time. We watched it from the terrace, I guess, up by Docking Bay 7 that is above where the Falcon is. So it's kind of a little bit of a upper view. I really enjoyed, I enjoyed it a lot more from this space than I did the area that was suggested to us by cast members, which was back over by, like, where the droid depot is and where the kind of, like, speeder garage is. That's a good spot if you want to be able to see both the big fireworks and the fireworks shot off the castle. However, we spent a lot of time kind of, like,
back and
forth.
Felt
like bobbleheads or like our heads were on swivels, kind of going back and forth and back and forth. So I felt like I may have potentially even missed some fireworks because of how much I was turning my head all the time. And you didn't get a good clear view of the big fireworks. Whereas back by the Falcon, whew, that was cool.
Yeah.
I do agree with James. I wish that I think the storyteller droid was a really cool thing that they created and added to kind of plus the show back there and kind of really tie it in to the land in Batu versus just having the fireworks show kind of just start and there's Star Wars music that's going along with it. So I thought that was a really great addition. I was like James, so I was kind of thinking that the droid was going to do more during the actual fireworks show than just kind of like he just kind of hung out during the fireworks show.
So the next day was our Pride Night day, and we did not go into the park before the mix-in time. So we actually, producer Vern has only been to California mainly when we've gone to Disneyland trips. So he wanted to do something not Disneyland. So we told him it was his day to pick whatever, and we went out to Newport Beach, which was a lot of fun, actually. It was very warm out that day, but it was a lot of fun. We drove out there because we had a rental car this time, and the neighborhood there is really kind of cute and beautiful. Teresa, what did you have? You had some ice cream thing that was like...
Yeah, we got Balboa bars. We picked ours up from a location called California Ice Cream. I thought that was so cute. But cute basically, name. It's a hand-dipped ice cream bar. I could choose if I wanted chocolate or vanilla ice cream. They hand-dipped it in Ghirardelli chocolate, and then you got to pick the toppings that went like... that it was rolled in or dusted in. So I chose... What did I choose? Vern... I don't even remember what Vern chose. I got Heath. I decided to have mine in Heath. You could do sprinkles. You could do, like... I'm trying to think of what some of the other options were. Sprinkles. There was Oreos. Heath. There was, like, six or so options of things you could have it topped with. But, yeah, I went with Heath bar. It was really, really, really good. It was suggested to us by some... local weekly tiers that if we're going out there, we needed to try a Balboa bar because they're just, it's something that area is known for. And yeah, it was really fun.
They were pretty big. They looked really good.
We also ate, there was this really cool burger stand called Irv's Burgers.
That everybody was getting food from this place.
That, they've been there apparently since 1946. So it was a really cool little like corner shop burger stand that had like, what, maybe four stools inside, but there's plenty of seating out around the area there. They have this little, definitely geared towards children, like amusement area that had all these, like a swing thing. And yeah, it was really, really fun. So
it was also right next to the ferry that went over to the little island that was over there that we took over and walked around. Which was really cool. I mean, there's some really nice houses over there. There's some, I mean, really, kind of expensive, but fun.
And really interesting. There was a lot of historic houses that we walked past. There was a house that we walked past that was that's on the National Register of Historic Places. So there were some really interesting properties and just really relaxing, really chill little area. After that, we met up with a weekly tier who so graciously invited us to join him for one of the Pixar Place Hotel speaker series. He and his family just happened to be visiting and were going to be staying at the Pixar Place Hotel and heard that it was something that we were interested in. And he was like, hey, anyways, he made some magic for us, which was incredible. It was really, really fun. I wasn't quite sure what to expect of the presentation, but we got to hear from the lead editor of Inside Out 2. Her name is Marisa Horwitz. It was so much fun. If you can, there is one more of these scheduled. Roger Gould, who is the creative director of Theme Parks Pixar Animation Studios, will be there doing a presentation Saturday, July 13th. If you can go to these, do it. These are such an amazing, very intimate experience. There's probably, what, 25, maybe.
Yeah, there wasn't very many
people that
you do have
attended.
To be staying at the Disneyland Hotel, mm-hmm. or somebody has to be.
Yeah, so how we were able to get in is he was, I think it maybe is based on how many people are in your room, but somehow magic was made for us and we were able to attend with this weekly tier, which was just incredible. Super, super incredible. So
we had not seen the movie when we went and saw this.
And both you actually booked tickets for the movie shortly after seeing this presentation. I didn't book my tickets right away, but on the way home, I told Vern, like, we need to see Inside Out too. And so actually, Vern and I just went and saw it last night, which if you haven't seen it yet, super, super great movie. Yeah. Highly recommend. It was really, really well done. But Marisa was talking about the editing perspective of Pixar films and kind of what the process is, gave us a real deep behind the scenes look. There was one scene in particular. It was the scene where the alarm goes off. So at the end of Inside Out 1, spoiler alert, which shouldn't be because it's been out for a while, but the council gets worked on and all of a sudden there's this like alarm light that gets installed and they're like, puberty, what's that? And then that's kind of how it ends. So obviously that alarm's gonna play a part in the next chapter of Riley's story. So inevitably that alarm goes off. And so they kind of showed what the storyboarding looked. She showed us all the different layers and the different processes that just that one scene went through, which means all of those scenes go through that. It was some, I wish we could have like taken photos to figure out what she shared the numbers. It was something like
crazy.
Over 100,000 storyboards were created for that one two and a half minute scene. Those crazy amounts of storyboards got whittled down to like 14,000, which then got whittled down to like 500, and then they actually only used like 15 or some crazy thing like that. And you think about that was just the one scene. What does that mean for the whole movie? Yeah. So it just...
Well, she was talking about how it's different when you do animation than when you do live action, because she was explaining that like she's done both, and that usually like... For a regular movie, you go out, you shoot the movie, you know, you get all the shots, and then it's kind of dumped on the editor, and they have to make a story out of what's been shot. I mean, obviously, there's, like, a story that they were going for, but to really craft the story into the final thing, they have to do all this. In animation, they spend 2 or 3 years on this movie where trying to come up with all the scenes and doing storyboards and reworking things and having people within the studio do voices and all of this stuff.
Before it even gets given to animation to start animating.
Which is like the last thing she said, because they record the voices of the actors before that, and they do all these different things. They had a group of teenage girls that they were able to watch the storyboards and stuff to see if that was accurate for them, which I thought was really cool. They had also had some people come in that understood emotions and were doctors who understood this type of stuff to make sure that they were accurate. And I had seen, from even before knowing that, I had seen people online saying that some of the ways they portrayed these new emotions were people that have these strong emotions like anxiety said that that's exactly what it feels like, is what was represented on the screen. And when I watched it with James on Sunday, I turned to him towards the end and I said, if that is what anxiety is like, and people said that's what it's like having anxiety, I don't know if I've ever had anxiety, because I don't...
It was we won't spoil it, but it was a really powerful scene.
Yeah, it was.
It was really powerful. Yeah. But it just... Giving a peek behind the curtain to kind of talk about... She was talking about how her job's kind of like... She gets given all these puzzle pieces, and then they have to, like, as editors, they kind of have to figure out how to plug them all together. And so she was talking about even different scene ideas that were pitched and people were really excited about that didn't end up making it into the final cut. So she kind of talked about some of the ones that were her favorites, but also then explained why, you know, and because we were like, that sounds awesome. She's like, I know everybody thought that scene was great, but however, it didn't work because, you know, in
it
the greater
the movie yeah, down
because in the greater or, story yeah. arc, it just didn't quite work. But anyways, incredible. Never did I think I would like know what the editing process looked like. She showed us like what her screen looks like while she's editing these things. It was wild. It was really, really cool.
It was super cool to see behind the scenes how this stuff comes together. And the team, she has a whole editing team that work with her and stuff. So it was really amazing. Anyway, so after that, we went over and got in line. We met up with James and Vern to get in line for Pride Night. And we got in at Mix-In, which was about 6 o'clock. They let us in about 5 minutes early. We got our badges. What was cool with Pride Night was you could pick between, I think, 4 to 5 different colors of badges.
Spoiler alert, we didn't realize you could pick.
Yeah. She kind of just handed it to us, and then later somebody was like, oh, you could have picked. And I was like, really? But it was really cool. They gave us a really nice guide that had photos of all the different food offerings and all of that. I thought it was really well done to be able to kind of know what was happening and be able to kind of have an overview of everything, where everything was. We knew, and one of the things that I thought was wonderful about this night was there was a series of events that happened later in the evening that were kind of back to back to back, and I thought that they had scheduled that really nicely. So what we decided to do was kind of we ate dinner and we tried to get some things together in the beginning. Because starting at 9:30, which is a few hours after we've entered, obviously, 9:30 was the fireworks. Right after the fireworks was the Pride Welcome Cavalcade, which we wanted to see. It was also on Main Street. So basically, watch the fireworks. Everybody kind of disperses to the sides. The cavalcade goes down. Then we were going to follow the cavalcade, and there was going to be a vocal performance that was supposed to be really good. And then back there was also Mickey and Minnie meeting in their Pride outfits. And that was kind of like the main things we wanted to hit. They were all back-to-back. So we did execute on that. We also realized that a lot of other people also wanted to execute that plan because when after
it was
the fireworks,
a good plan.
It was very hard to get like a good spot along Main Street because people kind of were there anyway. But what did we do before all of that?
So before all of that, we got like dinner out of the way. So with these after-hour events, you have Mix-In at 6 o'clock. However, the quote-unquote official party doesn't actually start until supposedly 8 o'clock. But really, it doesn't now start until 9 o'clock because even though Mix-In is from 6 until 8, regular guests are still filtering out of the parks between 8 and 9. I do wish, on one hand, that Disney would kind of start doing that a little bit earlier. So yeah. Maybe get regular guests, get them moving out of the park starting at 7 so that they're out by 8 so that the party can officially start at 8. This is different because in previous years, there has been, the party has started at party start time. In this case, it was 8. So you could start doing photo ops, meet and greets for Oogie Boogie Bash, like the treat trails and stuff would open. They would just make sure to check your bands and wouldn't let you go through those experiences if you didn't have the party specific bands. However, this time it was a little bit different. They didn't even allow like photo spots to open. So even things that didn't have a character meet and greet, you couldn't stand in front of a photo backdrop before 9 p.m. And my guess is they wanted to make sure that there was no non-party people in the park before things started.
Yeah.
When we were waiting for fireworks on Main Street, they went past, I lost count how many times.
A lot of times.
They came through having everyone check. I'm telling you, it was probably a dozen times that cast members came through checking people's wristbands, which just makes me a little sad because that's new. And I feel like that's happened because people have not been honest and have abused the system and have been kind of sneaking into these after-hour events, which then forces them to have to do these things. But we made the most of that first hour because what you could still do starting at 8 o'clock is you could start ordering and getting the party night specific foods. What I tried was at dinner. This is going to be a surprise to everyone, including me. The thing I really wanted was actually at Galactic Grill, and it was a patatas and chorizo tostadas. They were delicious. These need to be a permanent menu item somewhere. Galactic Grill probably doesn't make the most sense for this, but holy cow, delicious. I will say it was two tostadas, kind of on the smaller side, and it was like $13, so I do feel they were a little overpriced, but the price was also because it was a Pride Night specific offering. I'm sure it was inflated a little bit, but if this was like a regular thing that you could get at the parks, I would easily and happily pay like $10 for the two tostadas. That feels a little more right. Like $8 to $10 feels a little more like the correct price point for the amount of food you were given. But man, they were good.
The you're going to have to... Teresa's going to correct me. I know it, because she knows what all the after-hours event food was. We decided to do Alien Pizza Planet. I had the Countdown Shrimp Fusilli, and James had a Mega Pepperoni Slice, so that's not a thing.
You guys just got regular food.
And the green drink, was that something that was...
Just a regular food item, too, yep.
But you got a green drink as well, because I got you one.
Yep, but those were both just those were normal Pizza Planet menu items. They may be... I don't know if they
were... The Shrimp Fusilli was good.
Pixar, if some of them may have been Pixar Fest specific, but they weren't Pride Night specific. Sure. But some of the other things, we were also really good. We started getting our mobile orders together early.
Like right away, yeah.
Which then also helped, because then we were able to select the return times that we felt were going to make the most sense, instead of thinking about it a couple of hours into the park, opening our app and going, oh shoot, the earliest window is not until... the end of the party, or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. We definitely planned a lot better for this after-hours night than we had in the past for anything, really.
Yeah.
Because we were like, okay, where do we think we're going to be at this point? We need to go, we want to get the patch that they have for Magic Key. So what time do we want to go back there and get that?
Yeah.
That's when we should order. James got the cookies that were at the Harbor Galley.
That one we actually messed up on, because we got there before 9 o'clock not realizing, oh, party things aren't really going until after 9 o'clock. So we planned a little too efficiently for the Magic Key patch.
One thing that was open, though, that we wanted to get to early was the merch shop. We went to the Star Traders in Tomorrowland. Teresa could talk about the Emporium had something going on, too. Star Traders was great. We got in there with no problem. There was, for at least us doing it early enough, there was plenty of merch. James and I got a nice Pride t-shirts. James got a Pride baseball cap. Vern got a Pride magnet. Mm-hmm. James also got a Pride pin, I think, that was back there. I didn't feel like there was a ton of merch, which I guess for only two nights of doing it, I can understand. But I thought it was good. It was easy to get checked out and everything like that. This is also where I saw there was a gentleman there that I have to talk about. He was dressed as a disco ball.
He was.
And
so good.
His outfit was... way over the top, but also amazing.
And well, we saw him later. So we first saw him when it was still light out, and then we saw him later in the evening, and he like had flashing lights and everything. He was like a walking party in his disco ball outfit. It was amazing. The outfits that we saw people wearing were incredible. I mean, you and James actually ended up purchasing shirts to feel a little bit more like... like you had dressed...
more Pride, yeah.
Yeah, dressed for Pride.
You were wearing a non-Disney but rainbow shirt, and you had gotten so many compliments about it.
And I had rainbow ears. Yeah. Vern had picked up the new Pride Mickey button-up shirt. It's like a dark blue shirt. And he had... it just so happened when we were out in Florida, when we checked out the Character Warehouse, they had, like, the Mickey-style hat ears, but they were the Pride Mickey ears. Yeah, so anyways, I think we looked good. I think we did a good job.
One thing I want to make sure that we mention, I'm sure we would have, but the vibe is the best way I can say it.
Just the
party
feel, ambiance.
Was amazing at this event. I don't think I've been in a Disney park. Okay, that's not true. The only other time I have been in a Disney park that felt this electric was years ago when I was there for New Year's Eve.
It was super fun.
The people were just very excited to be there. Everybody was in good spirits. Like, there was just an energy about the park that just was amazing. I can't even describe it.
Even in, like, the downtime, people were just super... I did not see anybody that was, like, stressed out.
No.
Or, like... looking like they were having a bad night, which definitely during Star Wars night, there were people that were frustrated and kind of feeling the pressure of trying to get as much done or being disappointed at what things were and weren't happening because of the little bit of weather that we were having. But this was complete opposite. Obviously, we did have better weather that didn't impact anything. But even just like standing on Main Street waiting for the fireworks, all of Main Street was singing along with songs. And the thing that was fun is that happens at Disney normally, right? Yeah. Like, people sing along to Disney songs. People also dance in the middle of Main Street. But this was, like, contagious.
Yeah.
They would notice one person was singing or dancing. And so then that was like, oh, that looks fun. I want to do that. It was just so, like, cheerful and uplifting and obviously very loving and accepting. It was amazing. Amazing. And the other cool thing, too, is they painted Main Street with the rainbow flag. So they had rainbow flag projections all up and down Main Street the entire evening. Same thing with Small World. The entire Small World facade was a rainbow pride flag, and it looked like it was like waving in the wind, so it was moving.
Mm-hmm.
They did all sorts of different lighting on Sleeping Beauty Castle, so it wasn't just...
And the Matterhorn. The Matterhorn had flag, pride flag, yep, going, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But the Sleeping Beauty Castle, I assume, would just have like one lighting package on it, but they were shifting around,
yeah,
throughout the night. There were so many spotlights.
Yeah. Well, it and then one like, of the coolest things was the DJ over
the,
in
yeah, the dance
by the Fantasmic area was they had so much smoke you couldn't see the rivers, yeah,
like
of America.
The smoke and fog, and they had like lasers shooting out over.
And there
them,
were people that
lights,
were doing like rave dancing in front, oh, like it was, there were some people with glow sticks that made it look really cool. Like, again, not Disney like cast members, but like people there were really into it.
But on the flip side, Disney did plan the dance party.
That's
and
true,
did plan the environment,
yes,
to make the, you know, make the people.
I'm just saying it's like not just the party, it's also the people.
James and I went and did some line dancing over at the
Golden Horseshoe.
The Golden Horseshoe. I was going to say Stage Door Cafe, which is totally wrong. That's next door.
not
it would have been weird
there,
if we would have been line dancing at the Stage, mm-hmm, Door Cafe. But yeah, we went and did line dancing. And when we first went in, it was more of a demonstration. It was just the cast members doing a line dance. And it was beautiful. It,
yeah,
was like almost like a lyrical slow dance line dance. I've never seen line dancing like that.
Yeah.
And then the next song was, we're going to loosely call it line dancing, but it was the cha-cha slide. But James and I went and did it. We
of
had
course
a ton of fun. That was the other cool thing. A bunch of people, not Tegan, not Vern, but a bunch of other people ran onto the dance floor to go, you know, to do that. It was just, again, it was just fun. Nobody felt like they were like embarrassed or being judged,
no,
by anybody. It was just nothing but like good feels.
I also want to say, since we're talking about being judged, James can speak to this as well. I am never a PDA, like, hold hands in public person. And part of it, I think, is because I grew up in a generation where, like, it was still kind of being struggled to be accepted to be part of the LGBTQ plus community. Producer James was very excited because we held hands quite a few times during the event, and I didn't have any problem with it because I knew I was in a safe space. Now, I would say Disney in general is fairly a safe, mm-hmm, space,
yeah,
but I felt super safe. Right, James?
Yes. Yes, it definitely seemed that way. I think this is our second time having this experience other than being in San Francisco. So
yeah,
definitely meant a lot to me that we could have that experience and place to be and be surrounded by others like us.
What did you think? What did you think of the atmosphere in general?
I thought the atmosphere was pretty good. I think some of the standouts were definitely like just the energy at the cavalcade. Just people were just so excited for it and really cheering and yupping it up that I think the performers enjoyed it a little more too and were willing to give a little extra because of it. And then just kind of all around it was really nice. I thought the dance parties were going to be a little more dancey, but they were kind of just chill out and enjoy it. Though having the Rivers of America and that area totally fogged out was so cool.
So I wanted to ask you, since you have the mic on, how was your M&M cookies?
The M&M cookies were pretty good. Like, I thought they were a good consistency and had nice flavor. The cinnamon cream with it, still kind of a weird one to me, especially if you didn't expect it to have a good hit of cinnamon right away. It was fine. Like, the cookies alone were good. I probably would have rather had, like, a chocolate sauce or something instead. But I would eat those cookies again. And if that's anything like the Harbor Galley chocolate chip cookies are, like, I would say that is cookies worth trying.
You also had something from Red Rose Tavern later in the night, too.
Oh, my gosh.
That
I
may
had
have
the,
been
the
one of the
spice
best things
beef
of the night.
Tater tots or whatever it was. That might be one of the favorite things I had on the whole
what
trip.
Was
they
it?
Need that all the time.
Teresa, you have the menu in front of you. What was it?
Yeah, I'm trying to find it.
Frontierland or Fantasyland.
There it is. The spiced beef potato bites.
So what made this so amazing? I didn't try it. That was weird.
It was so good.
Everything about it just worked. Like, you had the right amount of sauce, beef, tater tots, and all the other like toppings that went with it. Everything tasted really good. It seemed like it was meant to be together. Every bite was just great. It was a good portion of it, like, really well done. Really enjoyed it. Wish it was on the menu.
It was a really, I only had a bite, but the bite that I had, it was a really good combination of, like, different textures too. You had the nice crispy potato bites, aka tater tots, along with, like, the tender and juicy shredded beef that was on there, and then you got a little bit of a kick from the creamy spicy sauce that they had on it. It was, yeah, no, it was really, really good. I could see how maybe eating the entire bowl might be a little heavy, but man, that one bite that I had was great.
No, definitely not heavy.
No? Well, that's good.
One of the other early treats was the, what, watermelon beignets?
Oh, yeah, so we can go back up and we can start back on our food journey.
Yeah.
So over in New Orleans Square at the Mint Julep Bar, we tried the Honeydew Mint Julep as well as the watermelon Mickey-shaped beignets. I will say the flop for me was probably the watermelon Mickey-shaped beignets. The watermelon to me tasted like a sour, almost like a Jolly Rancher watermelon flavor, which I was expecting more of a light, natural watermelon flavor. So that just kind of threw me off. So I think with the sugary sauce combined with the powdered sugar of the beignet, it was a little too sweet for me. What did you think?
I thought it was okay. Like you said, it tasted like a watermelon Jolly Rancher.
I really like watermelon Jolly Ranchers.
Watermelon flavor in general.
Yeah.
And I feel like every time I get something that's watermelon flavored, I'm disappointed because I feel like it's such a hard flavor to get right because it's either too candy tasting or it's too mild.
Yeah.
And it's overpowered.
It is a tough flavor.
I feel like they did the best they could.
It was good. It was what it was.
Yeah.
I just for some reason wasn't expecting it to be so sugary tasting.
I thought that before it got too tart for me on the back end, I thought the first sip I had of your Honeydew Mint Julep was really good.
This also needs to be a permanent menu item. This was so good. So I enjoy the specialty mint juleps. I'm not a traditional mint julep person because for some reason I'm not a, same thing with like Moscow Mules. I'm not a big like mint in drink fan, but with the right combination on these specialty mint juleps, it's perfect. It like has the correct blend, and the Honeydew Mint Julep had the correct blend. The Honeydew flavoring all within the drink was great. It was a very light, crisp, and refreshing take on a mint julep. It wasn't very, you didn't have like the tang from like the lemonade or it wasn't overly minty. Everything just really, the melon somehow blended and tamed everything down and just really did a really nice job. The other thing that was
your garnish
shockingly
was cool.
Delicious was, yeah, there was a melon ball garnish. So there's three melon balls on a skewer, and I just let it soak in the drink and was then going to just eat them at the end. That was the correct choice because them soaking in the mint julep and, oh, so good.
Because you had a honeydew, a watermelon, and what was the third ball?
And a musk melon.
Oh, okay. The other thing that we tried,
so good,
which I want to give a pro tip to, I went to the Plaza Inn and got the Pride Cake. They only have this on, like, not-to-go cutlery.
Yeah.
So I brought that in out to watch the fireworks and eat before the fireworks. I would say get this if you're going to sit down because I felt bad afterwards because we put the fork and the plate on top of one of the garbage cans and hopefully somebody from custodial or somebody from restaurants took it back. But yeah. Now,
I'm sure they did.
The fireworks. It is that time, the fireworks. I thought the fireworks show was fantastic.
Oh, it was really, really fun. It was interesting because it was a mix of not just Disney music, which made it feel different. If anything, I would have wanted it to be a little bit longer of a show because it felt like the ending song, which is This Is Me from The Greatest Showman, felt like kind of like a pinnacle, like high song that when it was done, it left me wanting more. Like, I didn't feel like we had kind of typically how Disney does like a nice like finishing wrap. They kind of do a nice beginning intro and a nice finish wrap. I didn't feel like This Is Me was like a nice finish wrap. It just made me go more because it was so good.
I One of the things people said, because this is the same fireworks show that was at Pride Night last year, was this was the first this was the first Fox song in a Disney park, because This Is Me was a big deal.
Such a good song to set to fireworks, though. Holy buckets.
The Welcome Pride Cavalcade was right afterwards, for the most part. And
this was fun. It had different stops along the route, but if you didn't happen to pick your spot along the route that was one of these stop and dance areas, it was still a really fun cavalcade just to watch roll by.
The performers in this cavalcade, first of all, they had a lot of energy, but I think their energy was
being like
exemplified or boosted by the fact that people along Main Street were screaming in cheer towards these performers.
There was so much energy.
And when Clarabelle came out, it was all over. Mm-hmm. Like, Clarabelle Cow apparently
is the star.
I don't know how Clarabelle became like the icon of the gay community.
It happened last Pride Night. She came last year on Pride Night. She came out with like
sass.
The most ever sass and fabulousness, and everyone's jaw just was like, what? Like, where was this Clarabelle?
Yeah.
And ever since then, she's just, that's been the persona of Clarabelle, which I love.
Yeah.
I love. Why we didn't have this before. I don't know if there's one specific cast member we have to thank for this transformation or how this happened, but I'm here for it. I love it.
I will say that I have never experienced any street, anything at Disney, anywhere, that had the reaction of the crowd that this cavalcade did.
Oh gosh,
and
it was so good.
We talked about how electric the whole night is. This parade was like the peak of that, because people were insane for this cavalcade. It was great. Everybody who was in it did an amazing job. The characters got out and danced around. Didn't you say there was somebody who came out and like did the splits or
something? Was one of the parade performer dancers like dropped and did some sort. They were just past us, so I didn't quite see the whole thing, but they just like dropped in the street and did like some sort of like drop dance move, and I was like, what just happened? Like, it was wild.
Yeah,
all of the performers were at like their A++++++ level.
Had to be with the crowd.
It was wildly cool, and that it felt like they were like just feeding off the energy of the crowd, which was just at its like total peak.
Can you imagine magic happens if the crowd was like that? Like,
I feel
it's
like
already crazy.
It's already like on its way to that level.
Yeah.
So if it had that same crowd level excitement, just think what Merlin could do. So I do want to mention Clarabelle Cow is so popular. She had her own meet and greet at Pride Night, her own little photo op too.
Which
I thought that was so fun. After that, we walked up to there was a stage back in the Small World Mall area to go experience a musical celebration of Pride, which the description on the map was just experience this heartwarming foot tapping show featuring some of Disney's most unforgettable memories. It just kind of, oh, that's nice. You know, it's just don't sleep on this show. This was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I did recognize one of the singers. First of all, the performance group was the Muses. Yes, the Muses from Hercules, but it was mixed. There was men and there were women.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really great blend of voices. And I did recognize one of the performers from being also a Dapper Dan on Main Street during the day. And he was moonlighting as one of the Muses at night. But this entire group tested their vocal limits like no other. They were singing things that you would never experience anywhere. We had all sorts of like flip-flopping of things. They were doing all sorts of riffs and like crazy, crazy, crazy high notes. It was incredible.
Yeah.
The talent of this group was just unmatched. I just remember like every time that they were done doing something, even mid-song, I'd like turn around and be like, wow, like looking at the group that we were with, and just like, I was just completely blown away.
Yeah.
Completely.
I also want to point out, which I think I tried to point out, I don't know if it was you or James, but there were two sign language interpreters that were off to the side, and they were also very performative and putting their all into the performance, because as they were singing, like, you know, signing the lyrics of the song, they were also like moving and dancing and like Like, it was a show. Because obviously, if you're watching someone to get the lyrics, you're not seeing the show. So they have to perform. These two, fantastic, top of the line. The only time I've seen anything like this at this level was when Mickey and the Magical Map, they had two sign interpreters who were also very performative, mm-hmm. and it was great. So I wanted to give them a shout out too, because, you know,
if you weren't able to go and experience this at Pride Night, at the very least, I think you need to go on YouTube and try and find a video of this group, because they were just,
well, there were streamers. There was the guy streaming in the front row, so
real. I mean, it was so much talent. Like, I can't even I'm having a hard time describing what that experience was, because it was so unlike any other. Disney level performances are top notch, yet this somehow like completely blew that out of the water. I think what it was my feeling is they really allowed the cast and the singers to do their own thing with it, and they just went with it. You could see them like cheering each other on and supporting each other and like be like amazing each other. It was just,
well, the one female performer, you'd see her in the back and they'd hit certain notes and she would just be like in awe of, like, I didn't know you could do that.
It was amazing. Like, why this is put this in the Hyperion Theater for, right? I mean, wow.
We after this, we went over to Mickey and Minnie and they had quite the line. So we just took a couple photos, not with us, but kind of as they were between people. And then we went through Fantasyland, and this was where a really interesting situation was happening. There was a giant crowd and we were trying to figure out what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
The Queen of Hearts and
there were three
Maleficent.
There were three out. The
Evil Queen.
The Queen of Hearts was out, but the spin on what you see normally at the park. So this is a face Queen of Hearts, so she didn't have her daytime face on. I don't know how to say that to like not magic spoiler.
She was a face character, not a costume character.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good way of saying it. She was a face character, not a costume character. She looked like she had some sass. We did not stop and chat with her because she had a big old group.
But the
around
Evil
her.
Queen and Maleficent were in a mosh pit.
It was a mob.
Yes. And
there were so many people wanting their pictures with them.
Amazing, though. Like, they were interacting with people and laughing at people. And, like,
they
it was.
They handled
great.
The crowd really, really well, because they were still moving around, but they were making sure to kind of pose for everyone's different little selfies that they were trying to do in this group.
It was great.
It was really fun just to watch the interactions. But, yeah, that. I want to say that those were, for me, the highlights of Pride Night. The rest of the night, we did ride a couple of attractions. We rode Space Mountain and we rode Storybook Land Canal Boats because it's magical, absolutely magical.
We had
night.
A great cast member on the Storybook Land Canal
you
Boats.
You know what? Shout out to Musa, because they just, how we experienced story, there was so much comedy. It was like the Jungle Cruise meets Storybook Land Canal Boats. One of the first jokes that we were told was, as we were going through Monstro, it was something about, I hope you ate all of the tasty Disneyland snacks on your journey through the Magic Kingdom today, because we're about to become a tasty snack for Monstro. If he likes us, he will take us to transport us to a magical land called Storybook Land. If he doesn't, we go to the bad place, Universal Studios. And then just like left it there. There was so many little fun one-liners and different things that he had. Like, we did like boat participation in one. We voted on who our favorite princess was. It was so much fun.
We were the Mulan boat.
Yes. The consensus was the favorite princess for our group in the boat was Mulan. But so I don't know if that's typical for an after-hours event, or if that was because we had a boat full of adults only, if they make that spin, or if Musa was just being like fun and kind and like giving us a very personalized spin and take on the Storybook Land Canal Boats. But it was incredible, which reminds me, we need to put a cast compliment in.
I think James did. James was doing really good at, like, the second we had stuff like that, he was in the
app. Awesome. Awesome, awesome,
awesome. I will also say one thing that I want to point out that was really simple but effective, and I liked it, and mostly I liked it because we had two different names for it, was back behind Big Thunder Mountain, the rock range back there that they put in after Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, they had a rainbow lighting on it, which was really fantastic. And so we can either call this Pride Rock or the Rainbow Caverns.
No.
Or Rainbow Ridge is what it was.
Shout out to our Ordinary Adventures, because they coined both of those terms last year when they experienced Pride Night, and like they just stuck because they're perfect, right? Rainbow Ridge.
It was.
And yeah, it's just great.
Pride Rock
was the other one. Rainbow Ridge and Pride Rock. So good. So good. But yeah, it was fun. We did a couple at the end of the night. We realized we're like, oh, photo pass is part of these ticketed events. So we did pause and take some time to take photos on Main Street with the castle in the background. You will notice one of them happens to be the episode graphic for this week's episode. And then we also took our photos. They had the stairs going up to the train station on Main Street there. Mm-hmm. They had strips of color. I don't know if they were stickers or what, plus lighting on them.
The lighting was so cool.
To make the stairs like make it a rainbow. They just called it the rainbow stairs, but it was a really cool photo op, so we made sure to stop and do that too. Oh, I also want to mention that on the way in, there were a couple of signings at the Disneyana Gallery, which I did not know was happening. Those started at 6, so Vern and I actually went and jumped in line and got some things signed by some Disney artists, which was really, really cool. So you never know what you're going to find at these things. So I thought that was a really fun, unexpected thing to come across for our Pride Night.
I highly recommend people go to Pride Night because it was an amazing atmosphere. You will not regret it. It was a lot of fun.
The two artists that were doing signings at the start of Pride Night were Ryan Riller. He does those absolutely amazing and incredible paper cutout art pieces. You can always spy them and see them at the Disneyana store there in Disneyland. There's also prints, but it's like the originals are these 3D. They're just wild. He was very, very, very fun, very kind. And then also Jared Mariyama was there, and he does all the like super cute little versions of Disney characters that we know and love. So I was really excited because you all know how I am about getting Disney autographs. So of course I had to hop in, say hi, and get buy a couple of prints and have them sign them. So it was really, really fun.
Overall, a really great trip. Again, it's always nice to have the producers along with us. We did have our meetup too. It was nice to meet up with people. I know we talked about that last week. But it was overall a really great experience. We did get to ride the canoes with some Weekly Tears.
Mm-hmm.
We got to experience part of Pride Night with some Weekly Tears. So it was really great to kind of see everybody. In the future, we will be out for D23, but in the future, we're going to try to announce our meetup stuff and everything earlier.
We actually have our D23 meetup already in the works, so details will be announced soon.
Yes.
As to what that meetup, when and where that will be.
Which hopefully will give you enough time to be able to like make it out mm-hmm. to the park and meet us. So, well, you've heard us talk about our great experiences staying at the Howard Johnson Anaheim. Well, we have partnered with them to offer our listeners a cool discount. Weekly Tears could get 15% off their stay. To take advantage of this discount, head on over to dealweekly.net and click on the Howard Johnson logo. Be sure to use the promo code on the website to get the discount. Enjoy staying there because we always enjoy staying there. And we're excited because hopefully their last building will be getting remodeled soon. But the other rooms have all been remodeled. And do you want to explain your mid-mod shop story of saving Vern?
Oh, yeah. So Vern, sadly, on our way in, after we had our flight, go off our flight, we're going to go get the rental car, going through the LAX airport, somehow lost and misplaced his neck pillow. And so we were trying to figure out how to get him a new neck pillow replaced before heading out. And on the last night, I was like, you know, let's just go check out the mini mod. The mid mod. They've got so many different things. There's snacks. There's things that, oh, you forgot, like toothpaste or whatever.
That was the last trip.
That was tag sunblock too. You know, you forgot like some of those like daily essential things. There's t-shirts that if you wanted themed t-shirts to go. I'm like, let's just go check. Who knows? They've got so many different things. It's a really nice mix. Well, guess what? We found even that they have travel neck pillows there. So Vern got to replace his travel neck pillow, really reasonably cost. It's not like where you go to like a convenience store and it's just marked up horrendously. It was priced right. Plus it was Mickey Mouse themed, so you can't go wrong there. So he was very, very happy. So mid-mod to the rescue.
Yeah. And we get our, we buy, usually every trip we go in and we buy a couple of the big water bottles from there, and then we refill our smaller water bottles with it and put it in the mini fridge in the room, which keeps it nice and chilly. So great, great place to have just right there in the building. And they were open late too, because you guys went there pretty late that one night when he got his neck pillow.
We were there, it was probably like 11:30 at night when we were there.
So that's pretty good.
Welcome back to Trivia Land, Shell. My name's Raymond, and I hope them answers are bigger and better than this here back porch I got attached to me. Don't you know, Evangeline and I wish y'all the best of luck.
Oh, what a trip. I'm glad you found your way back to Trivia Land, you two.
It was a fun, long, colorful journey.
Yes. I'm sure you've forgotten all about the questions that you had fun answering too, along the way.
Did we forget about them, or did we block them from our memories?
Yeah.
Well, let's find out.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, let's get you those answers. So the first question asked was, who is the face character you can meet in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge that is credited with setting up the Resistance base near Black Spire Outpost on Batuu? The answer is Vi Marati.
Oh.
Plenty of characters now showing up in Galaxy's Edge. We're really starting to get that atmosphere.
Yes.
Question number two, what is the name of the train operation that guests ride with Goofy on Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway? As Teresa knows, you go through Runamuck Park on Runamuck Railroad.
Good job. Good job, Teresa.
Well done indeed. Number three, name any of the droids that are part of the Star Tours The Adventure Continues Q or story that aren't 3PO or R2 and Rex as well. Looking for the key ones like the luggage scanner, known as G24T, or the human safety scanner, G29T, which I realize I might have flipped those, but those are those two, both the same type of droid, G2 droids. The safety officer giving you the spiel, Ali San San, and the pilot who's supposed to be there, AC-38, or Ace.
Ace.
Oh,
oh, that makes
Ace
a lot
pilot.
Of sense.
So no points for you on that one, but you learned. And you'll learn on this one, too, what are the six shorts that play in the Main Street Cinema, or at least the ones listed online, because that's what I could find, and they do change. You gave me Steamboat Willie and Plane Crazy. You did not give me Traffic Troubles, The Moose Hunt, The Dog Napper, and Mickey's Polo Team.
Other than Mickey's Polo Team, I don't think I knew the names of any of those.
And now you do.
Isn't Mickey's Polo Team even on the marquee out front? I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, interesting stuff, right?
But where's Perfect Picnic, James?
Oh, that's back in, like, the Run Amok area.
Gotcha.
At the El Capitan Theater.
So. Look at me, a big week of nothing. You got one, I got nothing.
Nothing. This is what you get for taking me to the park. I notice things. I see things. I write them down.
You're making an argument for us not to bring you.
But I'm helping you learn so many great things.
And we like learning.
And listeners at home, have you learned some great things that you think Tag and Teresa should be testing on? Just head to our website, dlweekly.net/trivia, and you can send your questions right on in for producer Vern and I to use.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, do like we did and go out and enjoy the parks.
And thanks, Tag, for editing this week's episode.
Thanks, James.